I'll share a few thoughts and then this is nice in this situation. We can have more of a discussion, and maybe you have some questions on the points that I'm raising or reflections. So then that's also very nice to hear from all of you. Many of you I know, many of you I don't think I've met before. So maybe I should introduce myself, because maybe everyone will not know. If you've not met me so far, then you're very fortunate. But today we're meeting. So nowadays they call me Keshava Swami. I don't know how much of a Swami I am, but that is the name that they've given me. So for the last some years, just over 2 decades, I've been staying at the manor. I grew up not far from here in Wembley. And when I was 21, I had a spiritual calling. So I went to India for some time and stayed in our temple in Mumbai. Anyone here from Mumbai? Okay. So I stayed in Chaupati, our temple there, for 6 months, and then I joined at Bhaktivedanta Manor. So I've been living there for some years now, and studying, learning, trying to do some service, and then coming out in different places and trying to share the knowledge of the Bhagavatam, the Gita, with people. So hopefully we'll try to do that today in a way which is relevant and inspiring. Couldn't connect. Why don't you just connect this? Yeah. So today I thought we could discuss something slightly different. Normally, when we study the Bhagavatam, then the Bhagavatam is stories of the past, isn't it? Even in Vedic literature, you have itihas. Have you heard of itihas? What is the itihas? Does anyone know? Yeah. So what you're going to do? You're going to put that on? Oh, it's there. Okay. Does anyone know what is the itihas? This is Ramayana and Mahabharata. Yeah. Ramayana and Mahabharata are the two main literatures that we have which describe the history. Does anyone know etymologically what the word itihas means in English? History, yes. But etymologically, iti means thus, and has means happened. So the word for history in Sanskrit is thus it happened. Nice, huh? Nice language. So like that, the itihas is basically literatures of the past. So I'm just going to just pull up. Ribol. Maybe we're meant to hear from you, Radhakanthapuri. That's a sign. That is a sign. So, I just put this away. Just speak. Okay, so today we're going to discuss from the Bhagavatam. It's usually, the Bhagavatam is full of so many stories. So in the first canto, we hear the history of Parikshit and how he got cursed. In second canto, we hear the history of Brahma and how he created the universe. In third canto, we hear the history of how Kapiladev instructed his mother, Devahuti. In the fourth canto, we hear the history of Dhruva. Maybe you should take the lock off. Although it's nice to continue seeing Radhakanthapu every time. But it's just that I have to put in the pin every time. In the fifth canto, we hear the history of Bharat. Bharat was the emperor of India, but then later on he became attached to Adiya and he became Adiya. In the sixth canto, we hear the history of Ajamil. Ajamil was a great Brahmin, but then he just saw one thing. What did he see? A prostitute embracing with a mother man. And he immediately became agitated and he lost all of his good knowledge and discrimination. So, like this, so many histories, so many stories. And from all of these stories, we learn lessons. Shastra can be understood on three levels. Shastra is literal. These are events that happened, so it's a history. But the second level of Shastra is didactical, so you can always draw lessons. We learn lessons from Ajamil's life. We learn lessons from Dhruva's life. But the third level of Shastra is that it's metaphorical. So Shastra is like it's a metaphor of your own life. So for example, Arjun is a character and we learn lessons from Arjun, but also there is an Arjun within each one of us. So it's a metaphor as well. So Shastra can be understood on different levels. Today what we're going to do is we're going to show you that Shastra, scripture, is not just talking about the past, but Shastra is also talking about the future. It's not just telling you things that have already happened, but it's telling you things that are going to happen. Things that are currently happening now. Because Bhagavatam was written hundreds of years ago, but already it has already predicted what is going to happen now. Just the other day I was at one devotee's home here in Edgware. I won't name his name, otherwise all of you may end up going there and raiding his house. But he showed me a 600-year-old manuscript of Bhagavatam, original, written in Sanskrit on the palm leaves. So this is Bhagavatam. This version is not 600 years old. This is on the iPhone. But we are... Sorry, now let me go back. So these are all the cantos of the Bhagavatam. You can see on the screen. So Bhagavatam has 12 cantos. 10th canto here, you can see on the left, is very, very beautiful because this is all of Krishna's pastimes. But once Sukadeva Goswami has told Parikshit all about Krishna's pastimes, then what Sukadeva Goswami does in the final two cantos is he's now preparing Parikshit to give him the final knowledge so that he can leave this world. So basically he's preparing Parikshit to renounce, not renounce the world. When Krishna was speaking to Arjuna, Krishna was preparing Arjuna to go into the battlefield, isn't it? But now Sukadev, when he's speaking to Parikshit, he's preparing Parikshit, okay, time to come out now. Time to come out. So, the 11 and 12 cantos of Bhagavatam here, the last two books you can see, are very, very important because they teach us or they inspire us for renunciation. They inspire us to start letting go of the world. So in the 11th canto, what you find is a description of a conversation between who? Krishna and Uddhav. And why is Krishna instructing Uddhav? Because Krishna is saying, soon I'm going to leave the world. And Uddhav, now I'm teaching you all this knowledge so that eventually you should also try to leave this world and take sannyas. So 11th canto is preparing us for renunciation. But then 12th canto is also preparing us to leave or to be inspired to detach from this world, because 12th canto is all of the predictions of Kali Yuga. So now we are living in Kali Yuga, the age of deterioration, the age of quarrel, the age of hypocrisy. And so if you read this canto, it's very, very incredible, because what is being told to us is what's going to happen in the future of the world. But when you read this, you realize this is already happening now. Because how many years are we in to Kali Yuga?
432,000 years to go.
432,000 years to go, yes. And how long is Kali Yuga for? 432,000 years and 427,000 years to go. So that means how many years ago did Kali Yuga begin? 5,000 years ago. Krishna Svadham Opagate Dharma Gnana Dibi Saha Kalau Nasta Drishamesha Pular Narko Dhuno Dhitaha. Bhagavatam says, Krishna Svadham, when Krishna goes back to his own abode, Dharma Gnana, religiosity, knowledge, also leave when Krishna leaves. Kalo nasta drishamesha, therefore Kali Yuga begins. The day that Krishna leaves is the day that Kali Yuga begins, because the darkness comes. And therefore, Bhagavatam describes basically what's going to happen in the world today. Yeah, so this is very, very important. There's a famous story in the Mahabharata of one man, and one day he decided to go and see Yudhisthira. Because Yudhisthira is Dharmaraj. Yudhisthira has all the best answers, isn't it? Previously, Yamaraj had asked Yudhisthira so many questions, isn't it? He said to him, what's the most amazing thing in the world? What was Yudhisthira's answer? Everyone's dying, but we still think we will live forever. What can be more amazing than this? Yamaraj asked Yudhisthira, what is more numerous than the grass on the earth? What was Yudhisthira's answer? The number of material desires within the mind of the living entity are more vast than the strands of grass. Yamaraj looked at Yudhisthira and said, what is faster than the wind? And what did Yudhisthira say? The mind. The mind is faster than the wind. But Brahma Samhita says, even if you travel at the speed of the mind, still you will not be able to reach the Supreme Lord without devotion. Yudhisthira was asked by Yamaraj, what is heavier than the mountain? What is heavier than the mountain? And what was Yudhisthira's answer? The love of the mother. Because the love of the mother creates an impression so deep that it's heavier than even a mountain. He said, what is higher than the mountain? And what was Yudhisthira's reply? The respect that you give to your father is higher than even what you give the mountain. So like this, many, many questions. So this man, he thought, I've seen some things I don't understand. I need to ask Yudhisthira some questions. So he came to see Yudhisthira. So as he was walking towards the palace, then to get through the door, first Bhim was there. So then, you can't just walk past Bhima like that, you know. It's like, these security guards in London are nothing, you know. Like, is Bhima there? So Bhima said, where? He said, I want to go and see Yudhisthira. I have some question. Bhima said, what question? He said, no, I observe some things in the world and it's completely baffling to my mind. So I need to ask Yudhisthira the answer. What do all these things mean? Bhima said, you can ask me. He said, you can ask me. So he said, yeah, okay, let me ask you. So he looked at Bhima and he said, there are certain things happening in the world today I've observed and I don't know what the meaning of it is. Bhima said, tell me, I'll tell you. So he said, first thing I observed is there was one agricultural field and there was a fence around the field. But the fence was moving in and it was eating all the crops. So he said, I don't know the meaning of this. So Bhim said, I don't know also. Bhim said, what else did you see? He said, the second thing I saw, amazing thing. I saw one man who had one pot of water and it was completely full up. And then what he did is he put that pot of water into 8 jugs. And then what he did is he took the 8 jugs and he filled the water back into the original pot. But when they filled it back up, it was only half full. What does this mean? Bhima said, I don't know. He said, what else did you see? He said, I saw one other amazing thing. There was one man and he had a needle. And through the eye of a needle, he was trying to put an elephant. And the amazing thing is, he put the elephant through the needle, eye of the needle, but then the tail got stuck. He goes, what's the meaning? Bhima said, I have no clue. He said, what else did you see? He said, the fourth thing I saw was that there was one boulder. You understand? Boulder, big stone. And everyone was trying to push it, to move it. No one could move it one inch. And then one sadhu came. And with his chadar, he took one strand of string. What do you call it? Thread. From his chadar. And with this thread, he just moved the whole thing. Bhima said, look, I can eat a lot, I can move a lot, but these questions are too, you, I'm stepping aside, you go and speak to Yudhisthira. You ask him, I have no clue. So then this man went in. So then he began asking Yudhisthira the question, what do all of these things mean? Anyway, he had his conversation with Yudhisthira and then he was coming out. And then as he was coming out, he was smiling, very happy. So then he walked right past Bhim. Bhim said, hey, where are you going? He said, I satisfied myself. Yudhisthira gave me all the answers. He said, yeah, now you tell me the answer. I'm also interested. So then this man began giving him the answers. And he said, Yudhisthira was telling me that all of these are signs of Kali Yuga coming. Understand? What was the first thing? There was a field and the fence was moving in and eating all the crops. What does this mean? And Yudhisthira said, what this means is that in Kali Yuga, those people who are supposed to protect you, those people who are supposed to take care of things, those are the very people that start entering in your life and start taking away everything from you. Mm-hmm. Sound like the Inland Revenue, the tax man, the government, isn't it? Today, in today's day and age, government plunders you, so much money. University plunders you, so much money. How much are your fees now? I won't even ask. When I began university at UCL, that's when they first... I was the last year where there was no fees. After that, people had to start giving fees. Otherwise, university was free. How you can sell education? Education is a sign of love to nourish the future generations. Now it's a business. Everything is a business. Everyone is trying to take from you. The hospital is a business. The university is a business. The legal system is a business. Everything is a business. And those very people that are there supposed to protect you, they're the ones that are taking away from you. So in Kali Yuga, people don't have any faith anymore in anyone. Therefore, even for people in Kali Yuga to put faith in spiritual people is so difficult because in their life, someone always cheated them. So therefore, in Kali Yuga, no one is able to put faith, put their trust, because all the people that were meant to protect them were taking from them. So Yudhisthira said, this is the meaning. Then the second thing, remember that pot that went into 8 jugs and then it came back but the water was half. You know what this signifies in Kali Yuga? You give your love. So much love you give to all people around you. But no reciprocation. You give the best of yourself. But then people are not grateful. People don't acknowledge. They don't give back. In Sanskrit, what is the word for gratitude? Does anyone know? Kritagya. And what does kritagya mean etymologically? Gya means? Gyan. To know. Gya means to know. And krita? Action. The Sanskrit word for gratitude is literally to know what acts have been done for you. But people nowadays, they don't have gratitude. They don't realize my parents did this, or my teachers did this, or these people sacrificed for me. And because there's no gratitude, there's no reciprocation. So people gave so much love, but then you don't receive that love back. Therefore the water, the pot was full into the jug, but when it came back, it was half. So So in this age, relationships are very difficult because you give so much, but people don't deal with you properly. It's very difficult. Because in this age, everything has become very selfish. It's the me society, they call it. So everyone is always thinking about themselves. Therefore, one time one guru, he wanted to teach his disciple the difference between hell and heaven. So he said, first let me give you a vision of heaven. Let me give you a vision of hell. And in hell, he had this vision. And you know what the vision was? There was a long table and everyone looked very thin, very emaciated. And what it was that they had hands, but the hand was in the form of a spoon. But the hand was really, really long. So when the meal came, they were trying to eat, but they couldn't because it was too. So he said, this is hell. Everything is in front of you, but you can't eat. So they were suffering like anything. And then he said, now let me show you heaven. And in heaven, the amazing thing is, it was the same table. It was the same food. It was the same people with long arms shaped in a spoon. But everyone there looked happy. Everyone there looked healthy. Why? Because when the food came out, what were they doing? They were feeding the person opposite them. And that person was feeding them back. And he said, ultimately, this is the difference between hell and heaven. Where there is more and more selfishness, it becomes like hellish condition. And where there is more and more selflessness, it becomes like heaven. Therefore, families, it's difficult for people to stay together nowadays because mentality has become very, very selfish, so it's very, very difficult for people to live together. So this is one of the characteristics of Kali Yuga. No reciprocation, no gratitude. Then the third one was that the elephant went through the eye of the needle, but the tail got stuck. How is that possible? What is this? What's the meaning of this? Anyone know? Yeah, all the thieves, the big thieves, they get through. No one questions them. But the small one who tells something small, some small lie, they get caught. Once I was distributing books in Lincoln and there were these three police officers walking down the road. And they had machine guns, you know, like bulletproof vests, like. And then at one point they stopped one 15-year-old boy who was riding on a bicycle. And three of them surrounded him with guns and said, you're not allowed to ride a bicycle in town. And I was thinking, like, my God, there's like so many people doing things here. This young boy is just riding a bike, you know, and these three guys come with machine guns to tell him, get off the bike, you know. It's like, it's a little overkill, you know. So this is what happens in Kali Yuga. Actually, Hitler, he had one, PR man, Goebbels, his name was. And he had a famous line. He would say, if you're going to tell a lie, tell a big lie. Because if you tell a big lie, people will think, no, that's such a big thing. He couldn't have lied about that. It must be true. It must be. I mean, you can't lie about that, you know. He says, never tell a small lie. Because small lie, everyone will look very, very closely. Is he telling the truth? I don't think he's telling the truth. But big lie, no one will question. So it's like that in Kali Yuga. The big thieves, the big people, you know, they just get away. So there's so much corruption in the world. So many conspiracy theories. 9/11. Who knows what's behind it? If such a thing can be covered up, we won't go into whether it was or not, but if such a thing was orchestrated by the US government themselves to justify their foreign policy in the Middle East, the fact that it can even be a credible theory shows how crazy the world we're living in is. Did man really go to the moon? Imagine how people can be tricked. in this world. Big thieves, they go through, and we don't even question. And then the fourth and final thing is that the sadhu with a thread moved the boulder that no one else could move. And what does this signify? Bhagavatam says, Kalar dosha nide rajan asti hye ko mahan guna. Kali Yuga is like an ocean of faults. Kali Yuga is like this boulder. It's so heavy, it's so difficult. No one can move it, no one can change it. But Bhagavatam says, asti hye ko mahan guna. But still in Kali Yuga there's one good quality. And what is that one good quality? Just like the sadhu came with his thread and moved the boulder that no one else could move. In Kali Yuga, all the difficulty, all the imperfection, all the obstacles, they're immovable but by the unassuming thread of the holy name of Krishna. Kirtana deva Krishna sya mukta sangha param brajet. You can be freed, mukta sangha, you can be freed from all of that terrible effects of Kali Yuga, and in this way you can attain perfection even in this age. So Bhagavatam is describing these things are going on. You want to see what the symptoms of Kali Yuga are? And then you can tell me if this is already going on in the world. So you see, these are the verses of the Bhagavatam. Remember, we have a script of the Bhagavatam which is 600 years old. So these things, of course, we know this is 5,000. But even if a modern scholar comes and says, no, this is new. But we have a script, physical, which is 600 years. And see already what was being said that's coming true now. Sukadeva Goswami said, then, O King, religion, truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance, mercy, duration of life, physical strength and memory will all diminish day by day because of the powerful influence of Kali Yuga. Everything's going down. Duration of life is going down. Is that a fact? Is it? Of course, we understand there's different yugas, and so. But within Kali Yuga, I also feel, if you look at the history, of course, we don't have history of 200, 300, 400, 500 years ago. There was no Gallup poll at that time of how long people were living. But we do have accounts of people, even many years ago, in different centuries, who lived for incredibly long amounts of time. Nowadays in Kali Yuga, if you live till 100 years old, you get a letter from the Queen congratulating you. Did you know that? In this country, if you live till 100, of course the Queen is herself, she's not here now. But it's very rare. Duration of life is decreasing. Yeah, such an unnatural lifestyle. Right? So many diseases, so many difficulties. Memory decreasing. People can't remember things now. And because why? Because of technology, isn't it? AI. Chat GP. Yeah. You don't need to. All the answers are there. It'll do it for you. Now you can. You just have a video, and the AI is. It just summarizes everything for you. You don't need to think anymore. You don't need to study. You don't need to do anything. AI will do everything. So people have become so dependent on technology. Isn't it? Now I see kids, it's like you ask them like 5 times 4. And what's the first thing they do? They pull out their phone and the calculator, like 5 times 4. You don't know like basic? No, because we become so reliant on technology. So cognitive functions, lifespan, mercy is going down. So many slaughterhouses, so much inhumane activities. Everything is going down. physical strength is going down. Everything. This is happening. In Kali Yuga, wealth alone will be considered the sign of a man's good birth, proper behavior and fine qualities. And law and justice will be applied only on the basis of one's power. Is it true? Yeah. Might is right. Whoever is powerful, is it? History was always written by the winners. The winners, the most powerful, the most aggressive, they win and then they write history. And that's it. That's the world we're living in. It's not that who's right. Legal system means if you got enough money to get the best lawyer, then you'll win the case. Doesn't matter whether you're right or not. You just need the money to get the right people. Radhakanta Prabhu studied law. They say never trust a lawyer. Yeah, we trust you. Wealth alone. Everyone is judged, status symbols, by your wealth. How much money do you have? How successful are you? You don't have? You don't have a second house by 25? You should have a second house. That means he is not together. He is not. When parents want to get their children married. Yeah. If say you have a daughter, you will first, what will you ask? When you see a prospective boy, what will you ask? What's your job? How much money? First, these questions are there. Because if you haven't got these things together, it means you're not an appropriate person. Yeah, I'm not saying these things are not important, but it's become the prominent. Men and women will live together merely because of superficial attraction. Is that true? Mm-hmm. Once I was driving in Manor and there was a wedding going on. And then as I was driving, the Pandit, one of our devotees, he was speaking and he said, in Vedic culture, you don't marry the one you love. So I hit the brake. Who do you marry then? The one you hate? So I was waiting to see what he said next. And then he said, in Vedic culture, you don't marry the one you love. You learn to love the one you marry. I thought, wow, that's interesting. That sounds interesting. Because where does love come from? Is it superficial attraction? Chemistry. There was the chemistry between us. Chemistry may bring you together, but commitment, character, that keeps you together, isn't it? But in this day and age, people can't. They come together, superficial attraction, and therefore divorce rate is so high. Because people can't commit to each other anymore. This is Kali Yuga. Success in business will depend on deceit. Any successful business. It's like that, no? It's a dog-eat-dog world. If you are so honest, if you will just play by all the rules, do you think you'll be successful? Do you think the good guys win in business? Or do you have to do some nefarious activities? Everyone's like, yes, we must, it's dharma. Of course, as Vaishnavas, we try to avoid all these things, but everyone is doing some. Womanliness and manliness will be judged according to one's expertise in sexual relation. And a man will be known as a brahmana just by wearing a thread. If you have a thread, 2 paisa thread. Oh, Brahmin, I know, I am a Brahmin. I have, just see. Once one devotee, Prabhupada gave him Brahmin initiation, so he was feeling, you know, like, it's nice when you have a Brahmin thread, you can feel it, you think, yes, I am, I made it. My life has become successful. So Srila Prabhupada was lecturing. Maybe Srila Prabhupada, he sensed some pride within him, maybe. So he was sensing, he feels very proud, he has a Brahmin thread, that his thread is very sacred, keep your thread, you know, shining white, you know, it's Brahmin thread. So Prabhupada was lecturing and the mic was moving, falling down, you know. In ISKCON, all the mic stands, they always fall down. It never works. So the mic was falling down. So you know what? He told this devotee, take your Brahmin thread off. No, my Brahmin thread. This is my Brahmin thread, you know. So in his mind he was thinking, no, take it off, take it off. So, you know, once you have a Brahmin thread, to give it away is not. So he took off his Brahmin thread. So Prabhupada took it and he wrapped it round the mic and he used it just to hold the mic up. Interesting. Prabhupada was saying that, you know, using the Brahmin thread for the purpose of delivering Harikatha, that's more important. Brahmin is not just some yajna or some, you know, kind of ritualistic. Brahmin means yajan, yajan, patan, patan, dana, pratigraha. You have to give knowledge. You have to educate. You have to be a good example. You have to uplift and elevate people. That's a Brahmin. Isn't it interesting how Bhagavatam is predicting all these things? A person's spiritual position will be ascertained merely according to external symbols. Isn't it? Like this. Is it? Carry. Symbol. No, I am a sannyasi. Okay, it's nice. But there must be some substance of character. Because who is the real sannyasi? Anashrita karma phalam karyam karma karotiya sa sanyasi cha yogi cha nanir agnir na chakriya. A sannyasi is not one that just renounces things or has some external symbols. Anashrita karma phalam karyam karma karotiya. They have no attachment in their heart to enjoy any of the things that they have in their life. They only use for service. Sa sannyasi. Such a person is a sannyasi. Not just the person, na niragni la chakriyas, who gives up certain things. And on that basis, people will change from one spiritual order to another. A person's propriety will be seriously questioned if he does not earn a good living. Arun, how much are you earning? We want to see the figures to see how much of a... And one who is very clever at juggling words will be considered a learned scholar. Once Prabhupada told this story of one boy, he went into an exam. Anyway, he didn't have a clue how to answer. So some question was there. Who is Haridwar Basta? He was thinking, who is this? I have no idea. So then he wrote on the exam paper, Haridwar Basta is a dobendi lactylized by the plactony of Tinder. He wrote on the paper. Haridwar Basta is a dobendi lactylized by the plactony of Tinder. So, Prabhupada is telling this, so he's laughing. And then the examiner saw the exam paper. We thought, what's this? He doesn't have a clue. This is not even English. But he said, he's so creative. He's so original. I'll pass him. Even though the thing made no sense. Because he spoke, you know, some word jugglery. Okay, at least he's original. So it's like that nowadays. Anyone who can present nicely, show a nice PowerPoint, nice speech, nice. It doesn't matter the content of what you're saying. This is called framing bias. We're more likely to accept things that are framed and presented in a very nice way. If some guy comes in, little scruffy, can't speak properly, we don't take the person seriously. Even if you see in politics today a beautiful person, you're much more likely to listen to their speech. But what does beauty have to do with any of it? No, it's a beautiful person. We must take close attention. Pay attention to what they're saying. Why? Does that have anything to do with it? But it's psychologically. Therefore, this is Kali Yuga. So anyway, so many things are there. Marriage will be arranged simply by verbal agreement. It's happening? Happening today, no? No. People say, why I need a piece of paper? Why do I need a piece of paper? We are together. We are committed. We don't need a piece of paper to show that we are committed to each other. We just live together. Yeah, it's a piece of paper. Why do you need £5 in your wallet? That's just a piece of paper. You can also give that to me as well. You don't need a piece of paper. But it's not just a piece of paper. Because that £5 carries some authority. It carries some commitment. It carries some stamp from the government that, yes, this is valuable. So yes, marriage is just a piece of paper if you want it to be a piece of paper. Apparently, Mother Kalangana and Jivapati Prabhu got married. Is that true?
For immigration reasons.
Yeah, for immigration reasons. In that case, marriage was just the paper. You know, we had two devotees, Mother Kalangana and Jivapati Prabhu. Very, very wonderful devotees. They both left the world. And they wanted to come to serve Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda here for their whole life. But for immigration purposes, and he was a lifelong brahmachari, and Mataji was like a sannyasi. But in order to get the immigration, for them to get to be able to stay here, formally they got married. So anyway, that. But most of the time in the world, people don't. So they don't pay attention to all this. A person will think he is fit to appear in public if he has merely taken a bath. What does this mean? It means people think that, like for example, people come into the world today dressing in all kinds of ways. Or maybe I should say, hardly dressing anything at all. But they think, no, I'm clean, I've taken a bath, I can just appear in public. There's no other sense of chastity, of what it means to come into a public place. How you can just come into a public place and you have to appropriately appear. You can't just come, you know. But in the world today, it doesn't matter. Anything goes. Even Srila Prabhupada, when they took him to America, it was in the hippie revolution. So one time they arranged a program for Prabhupada. You know where? In the nudist colony. You understand what nudist colony is? No one wears any clothes. No one wears any clothes. So Prabhupada was walking. My God, how you take sannyasi to such a place? But the devotees, they thought, no, it's so good. They're off the bodily platform already. Maybe they are more qualified to receive the message, you know. Prabhupada was walking and there was one man. So he was completely not dressed. He was gardening. So he was completely doing gardening, just like that, in public. So Prabhupada is there. He is there. Can you imagine what Srila Prabhupada, he was from Calcutta, from Vrindavan, you know, he came to America, all these things going on. And Srila Prabhupada just looked at him in his eyes and he said, what are you doing with your life? like, I mean, I'm sure he was a well-meaning person, but it's like animalistic life. Who comes into a world without being dressed? It's an animal. And that person, he said, when the Swami looked at me in my eyes and asked me that, I something realized, yeah, what am I doing? This is crazy. Just acting like an animal. So this is Kali Yuga. This is what's going on. So the Shastra is incredible. This is not just theoretical knowledge. This is not just some stories of the past. This is helping you to understand the world that we're living in and what are going to be the challenges, what are going to be the influences. Nowadays, everyone wants to know what's the future, isn't it? I won't ask how many of you have done your astrology, isn't it? What's the future? Ooh, my planets are very bad. It's a bad period, 12-year bad period. No, it's not a 12-year bad period. It's a bad age, full stop. Because we're living in Kali Yuga. But asti here ko mahan guna, there's a great quality. If you take shelter of Krishna consciousness, if you take shelter of spiritual life, then you don't have to be affected. You don't have to be entangled. You don't have to be implicated by all these things. Otherwise, we go out there in the world and we get affected. In the Bhagavatam, it's also said that Kali resides in three places. Does anyone know?
Lord.
Yeah, no, that's... I knew you were going to say that. Yeah, Kali resides in where there is... slaughterhouses, intoxication, illicit sex, and meat eating, and then ultimately where there is gold. So Kali Yuga, definitely, that's true. But let's see also here. If you read this, Pumsham Kali Kritan Doshan Dravya Deshatma Sambhavan Sarvan Hariti Chittasto Bhagavan Purushottama. In Kali Yuga, objects, places, and personalities are polluted by Kali. So Kali even resides in objects. I've seen actually, like, saintly devotees. But once they get in front of a steering wheel, in a car, they turn into a different person, no? There's something about even just that car, you know? Control, then that it comes into you, isn't it? Do you experience sometimes? Or objects, they also like places. Yeah, normally you are a nice person, but then you go into some kind of place, and it's like all of these other things are coming that you normally would never do, isn't it? And even Kali comes into personalities.
Is it in terms of the desire, like when we say individual personalities?
It means they become affected by the influence of Kali, yeah. They become... they lose, their intelligence becomes covered. Of course, we also know, Bhagavatam talks about disciples of Kali. Kali Chela, isn't it? Now, there are also some people who are, how to say, they are spreading the influence of Kali. They are like agents of Kali. So, in one sense, Kali can enter all of us, affect all of us, but then there are also individuals who are specifically, you can say, I mean, just look at history and look at what some people did. Killing millions of people. That's heavy. It's not just someone who's been slightly bewildered, it's almost someone who's just been possessed by some kind of extreme level of darkness, isn't it? It's mad. Whoever did 9/11, whether it was this group or that group, this is possessed by Kali. How you can do that? How can you just fly a plane into a building? And just like, it's crazy. This is going on. So yes. So, we don't want to be Kali conscious, but we want to be Kali cautious. So be Krishna conscious, but Kali cautious. Because Srila Prabhupada said, my main complaint of my disciples is that they are not sufficiently scared of Maya. We think like, yeah, I watched the program, no problem. Yeah, I went to that place, I had no problem. I was unaffected. I'm advancing. But the seed goes in one place and then it comes out later on somewhere else. What goes in must come out. So we should be aware. Bhagavatam is telling us all of this, so we're aware of the environment within which we're living. We don't have to run away and be constantly scared. Sometimes devotees also get into Kali Yuga Katha, isn't it? Prabhu, the world is so bad. This is happening. The government, this, that, cost of living. It's like, so this is the final thing I'll say and then I'll open it up. There are two extremes when it comes to Kali Yuga. One type of person is completely indifferent. Anyway, whatever's going out there, we're devotees, we're not affected by all. You don't need to read anything, you don't need to do anything, don't be aware, it's okay, we're chanting. We're going back to Godhead. You know. So that's nice if you're transcendental. But maybe we're not transcendental. So indifference is maybe not a good approach. The other extreme is intimidation. Oh no, I can't do it. It's too difficult. Kali Yuga is weighing heavily on my head. Everything's against me. You know, it's too difficult. Then we become intimidated by all these things. So we shouldn't be indifferent to Kali Yuga. We shouldn't be intimidated by Kali Yuga. But we should just be informed. Read Bhagavatam. You don't need to read all the newspapers. You can read a few things and join the dots and verify, yeah, this is going on. And then be informed and then get on with Krishna consciousness. But we should be informed, because otherwise we will become implicated. We won't cross over Kali Yuga. We will drown in Kali Yuga. So do you want to drown? Do you want to sink? Or you want to swim? Choice is yours. Therefore, Bhagavatam is there to help us to swim by being informed about the nature of Kali Yuga. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Kali Yuga Pavana, Sri Gaura Hari, Sachinandana Gaura Hari ki. Okay, if there's any comments or questions, or if Shiva has any challenges. No, I'm only joking. Yeah, if anyone would like, it's very relaxed, you can be open. Yes, Prabhu.
So, is there any difference in Maya and Kali?
Yeah, some people ask this question. What's the difference between Maya and Kali? I guess there's different ways, but Kali is like the general influence of illusion, and Maya is like the specific tailor-made type of illusion that comes to you. That's one way of seeing it. Of course, we also know that Maya is also... We can also say Maya is one of the energies through which Kali Yuga then manifests. Kali Yuga can only manifest. when the Maya or the covering potency then covers and illusions things. So that's another way to see it. That Maya is basically the instrument of or the agency through which the effect of Kali occurs. So we can say there's a connection like that. Yeah.
But was Maya there before Kaliyuga as well?
Yeah, Maya is basically Durga Devi. So when Krishna creates the material world, or when Krishna is creating the material world, then Brahma is the one who's engineering. And it's said that there are five types of ignorance which need to occur before the material creation can occur. Just like when you go into a cinema to watch a movie, what's the first thing that happens before you can watch the movie?
Lights out.
Without lights out, there's no movie. So when the material world begins, first it's lights out, darkness, Maya. And that Maya is working under Krishna's Maya dhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunane nakonteya jagat viparivartate. This supreme this energy of is working under me, under my direction. So Durga Devi is the controller, the manifestation of Maya, and that's been existing since time immemorial. Because unless there's Maya, there's no material existence. So Maya covers us, illusions us. And you may say, why is Maya covering us, illusioning? Why is she working against us? Durga Devi is ultimately a Vaishnavi. She's a devotee of Krishna. But her name is Vaishnavi Jagamohini. She's Vaishnavi. But her service is Jagamohini, to bewilder the living entities. Why to bewilder? Because the living entities wanted to be bewildered. Because we wanted to come here and enjoy and try to be separate. Therefore, Maya Devi then comes and covers. Yes.
In one of the texts, in the month, I think it's text one, I think he says that mercy reduces as well, along with another symptoms. I just wanted to clarify, what does it mean by mercy?
It means people's sensitivity towards each other. In this day and age, people are not so sensitive to each other, isn't it? We become desensitized so easily. When I was a kid, I used to hate going into London. You know why? Because to see a homeless person was just like too much for me. It was too, so I hated. I never went into London. Then later on, I went to university and I was living in London. And then I used to see homeless people every single day. And then after some days, you just start walking past people and it's just like they're part of the scenery, you know? You become very insensitive. Of course, we can't necessarily help every single homeless person. If we do that, we wouldn't be able to function, you know. But does it affect us? Do we feel pain that other people are suffering? When we used to go on book distribution, Arun used to come with us, we used to go on marathons, and what we used to do is we used to come on the street to distribute books before everyone else. So we'd be on the street very early. And then what we'd do is we'd stay on the street till the night time when all the shoppers left, and then only we'd leave. So sometimes 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, all the shoppers leave, shops close. And what happens in the town center at 9 o'clock is that a transition occurs. And all the shops close, all the shoppers leave, and then you know who comes into town? All the homeless people. And then they choose which shop they're going to sleep in front of tonight. And then in that moment you see, my God, there's a whole nother world here, a whole nother reality. In the day, people just spending hundreds, thousands of pounds on the best trainers. And then in the night time, all of these people sleeping in a cardboard box. And you realize all these things are going on in the world and we're not even aware of it. We're just going along in our life without completely oblivious. So when we say mercy reduces, it means our sensitivity is being lost now. When we hear 500,000 people died here or died there, it's just a number. So a Vaishnava, you see, there's different levels of sensitivity. The lowest level of sensitivity is called apathy, which means you don't have any sensitivity. You're just oblivious to everyone and everything. Higher than apathy is sympathy, where you become sensitive, you see someone else is in trouble, but you're from a distance. You are seeing their pain. But then a higher level of sensitivity is empathy, where you feel their pain so much that you feel, I need to do something. Sympathy means you feel their pain, but not so much that you feel you need to do something. But when you are empathetic, then it's so. Therefore, Vaishnava is known as what? Paradukha. Paradukha dukhi. This means empathy. It means you feel someone else's suffering to be like your own. But nowadays, Bhaktivinoda says, what to speak of paradukha dukhi? Nowadays it's paradukha sukhi. What to speak of feeling pain for someone else? When we see other people in pain, we feel, my life is good, I'm happy, it's nice. Let's watch all the soap operas and see all the problems people have and it makes us feel better. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Amar Jivan Sade Pape Rata. My whole life, I became happy when other people were distressed. Subtly. When I saw other people losing, when I saw other people failing, I became quite happy actually. Because it made me feel better that, oh, I'm actually, my life is good. It's good if a few people fail around me. Just see how we become affected in this way. Yes, Arun.
In Kali Yuga, like Maharaj, when we, you know, like to every day kind of keep going and keep practicing and like go deeper into our sadhana and spiritual life, what's a factor like which keeps us going or we should kind of focus upon to like every day be there on time and do it properly?
Sadhu Sang, Krishna Naam. What is that verse? Krishna Naam. Oh, I can't remember that verse. Our hope is association of devotees and then through that association, engagement in sadhana, in spiritual life, to go deep. In the beginning, we're seeing Kali Yuga and we have to be aware of Kali Yuga. Later on, when we advance in spiritual life, we're seeing Krishna, we're seeing the spiritual world, and that becomes the impetus. You see, in the beginning of our spiritual life, the impetus is, let me run away from the world, let me get out of here. Most people don't even feel like that right now, therefore they don't take up spiritual life. They think like, what is all these guys speaking about? It's a good life, it's a good world. But when you become a little aware, you realize this is not a nice place. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, this material world is no place for a gentleman. But we don't have that realization. We think, no, it's good. I've got so many things to achieve, so many places to go, so much exciting adventures on the horizon. Yeah, maybe. But there's also janma mrityu jara vyadi dukha dosha darshanam. It's all going to fail. So in the beginning, our impetus on spiritual life is seeing that the world is dukkhalayam ashashvatam, it's temporary and it's miserable. But later on, you know what Prabodhananda Saraswati says about the material world? Gita says, material world, dukkhalayam ashashvatam, it's full of misery and it's temporary. You know what Prabodhananda Saraswati says about the material world? Vishvam purna sukhayate. When I look at the material world, I see happiness everywhere. You think, like, is he reading the same book as me? Mm-hmm. Krishna says, dukkhalayam ashashvatam. But in the beginning, we see this world as dukkhalayam ashashvatam, it's full of Kali, Kali Yuga, we need to get out. But later on, when our spiritual practices become stronger, then it's the attraction of Krishna, the attraction of devotion, the attraction of the spiritual world. And then everywhere we look in the material world, we see opportunities for service, opportunities to develop our relationship with Krishna. And then we look at the material world and we start looking at it different. We think, no, this world is so good. There's so many ways in which I can serve. So it's not our whole life we're just running away from Kali Yuga. In the beginning we have to talk about this because we need to create some detachment. Because we're in an illusion that it's all good here. It's not good. Just one of our devotees the other day, 57, healthy, morning, gets a headache, boom, blood clot, hemorrhage. Within 2 hours, left his body. Beginning to end. It all changed in 2 hours. That's all it takes. Padam padam, yad vipadam, tesham. Danger at every step. So we go around in this world oblivious to how acute the situation is. So therefore Bhagavatam is waking us up, waking us up.
Between man and buddhi, I mean the jivatma is the man or the buddhi or both, because it's a constant tussle between, you know, the man wants to do this, the buddhi says do that. So what's the difference? I mean, who am I? Am I the man or the buddhi?
Yeah, thank you, very nice question. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, bhumera po nalo vayu kamano buddhirevacha ahankara iti ame bhina prakriti ashtadha. There are 8 material elements. 5 are gross. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Then there are 3 elements which are subtle. Ahankar, which means ego, buddhi, intelligence, and man, mind. Mind, intelligence, and ego are subtle. And then Krishna says, apareyam itastvanyam prakritim vidime param. Is it? Am I saying it right? Jiva bhuta mahabaho yayadam dharyate jagat. I say it right? Yeah. Apart from these 8 is the soul. So the soul is not, is beyond the mind, beyond the intelligence. So think about it like this. Like say for example, here is a computer. We'll say for example this. Okay? So then there is the case, the screen. This is like the 5 material elements. Then there is the operating system, iOS. Which one is it? 15 or whatever it is, 18. Okay, then there's iOS, the operating system. And then there's me, pressing the button. So this, the screen, the battery, this is the 5 material elements, gross body. Then me, I'm the soul. And the iOS, the operating system, the software, the interface, that's like the mind, intelligence and ego. So the mind, intelligence and ego is the interface between the soul and the gross body. If the operating system on this crashes, you can't do anything. Therefore, in the world today, most people's operating system is corrupted. It has a virus. And for some people, it's crashed. This is basically why mental health is the biggest problem in the world today. Because everything is good, battery, everything is working, but the operating system has crashed. Virus has gone in. And therefore, the soul cannot deal with it. So the mind and intelligence are like tools that we are using. The mind is basically like a storehouse of memories, impressions from previous times. And the intelligence is the power of discrimination. So the other Upanishadic metaphor that's given is the chariot. So there are five horses, which are like the senses. Then there is the chariot, which is like the material body. Then on the chariot, there is a passenger, which is the soul. And then there's a driver, which is the intelligence. And then there are the reins, which are like the mind. So when we're functioning properly, the passenger tells the driver where to go, and then the driver controls the reins, and through the reins controls the senses. But in the world today, the horses are going everywhere. Intelligence is out of the window. Therefore, the reins are not being used properly, and then the chariot is going all over the place in different directions. So the intelligence controls the mind, which should control the senses. Therefore, Krishna says, higher than the senses are the mind, higher than the mind is the intelligence, higher than the intelligence is the soul. So the soul is using, or should be. But nowadays, not. Because people are impulse driven. People pick up a cigarette packet. And then on the cigarette packet it tells you, smoking kills. And while looking at that sign, they still take a cigarette out and smoke it. Is that driven by intelligence?
That's,
no.
Man or buddhi?
That's an uncontrolled mind. Because of previous impressions, addictions, habits. They're driven to do something even when the intelligence knows, but the intelligence is not strong and the spirituality is not awakened. Therefore, the horses are taking the lead instead of the passenger. So in the world today, people don't know. This is the biggest thing, that people don't know how to control their own mind. This is spiritual life. Yes, sir.
I saw your post yesterday with Mother Kalamani on Instagram. Would you like to share something about her?
Radha Kanta Prabhu is the authority on the life of Mother Kalangana. Actually, I was thinking you should write a book about her. All these memories of the devotees. For me, Mother Kalangana, we saw her from day one. As when we joined the temple, she was a great inspiration. So many things can be said. But I think for me, the biggest thing about Mother Kalangana is she was always very encouraging. She was like a real mother, you know. Whenever we would give a class, then she would come and give so much encouragement. Whenever we would come from a marathon, then she would come and she would... Whenever we would try to do some small service, she wanted me to try to serve here in Bhakti Center, and I failed miserably because I didn't do anything over the years. But one day when I came for a meeting, then I remember here where all the shoes are. I was here, maybe I was meeting with Radha Kanta Prabhu, and she came in and she paid full dandavats here where all the shoes are. She was so happy. She said, no, we must make Bhakti Center a success. This is such an important project. It's very, very encouraging. So Vaishnav means always positive, always encouraging. Vaishnav means someone who's always optimistic, So that was one aspect of her personality that I found. She was always very encouraging. So, no one in this world is self-made. We are only here because of the mercy of Vaishnavas. So yeah, we, all of you, by being here at Bhakti Center and contributing, you see, you can live here or you can contribute here. When a Vaishnava goes to a place, they don't just think like, okay, what will I get from this place? They think, what will I give back? And so all of us, we have an opportunity to really make Bhakti Center something amazing, you know, invite more people here, have more programs, increase the spiritual atmosphere. This is actually what Mother Kalunga, this was her anxiety actually, isn't it? It was her anxiety that Bhakti Center should be a success. And she always wanted it that hearing and chanting and spiritual discussion would go. Because if you take that out of Bhakti Center, then there's not much Bhakti in the center. Mm-hmm. Then it's a center. And the center is boring. But when there's devotion, when there's life, when there are people serving Krishna. So take the initiative. Gauranitai are here, take the initiative, bring some flowers for them. Take the initiative, come in the morning and chant here. Take the initiative, all these books are here. You can come together and you don't need someone to give a class, you just read together. Take the initiative to serve all your other devotees here by doing something nice for them. Then it really becomes a place of devotion. This is the great opportunity, because Narottam Das Thakur says, Tadara charana sevi bhakta sanivas janame janame hoy eya bilash. He's saying, my only desire life after life is to live with the devotees. You're living that dream. This is Narottam Das Thakur, who's the greatest devotee, said, I only have one desire, I just want to live with the devotees. I just want to live in Bhakti Center, life after life. So you're already doing it. It's such a great fortune. So please take advantage. And Bhakti Center is not a place you're living at. You are Bhakti Center. You make Bhakti Center what it is. So please, yeah, that would be nice. So, and then Mother Kalangana will be very happy. All her blessings will come. These are her Gauranitai? Yeah, these are the Gauranitai of Mother Kalangana. She brought them by her love. He said, Bhaktivinoda sings, Krishna se tomar, Krishna dite paro, tomara shakati ache. You have Krishna. You've captured Krishna by your love. Therefore, you can give Krishna. So Mother Kalangana brought Gauranitai here by her love. She's given us this opportunity, so...